Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 208 for July 12th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
Well, it was the second distillery we met, and there was a nice guy giving us a tour, and I saw the wooden box, and that was the start.
That's Hans-Henrik Hansen, who may well have the world's largest collection of Glenfiddich single malts. In fact, his collection is so extensive that the folks from William Grant & Sons go to his home in Denmark to research their history. More with Hans-Henrik in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. If politicians do one thing well, it's express outrage. And we saw more of that in Scotland this week as opposition grows to Diageo's cutback plans. Most of the outrage came from the area around Kilmarnock. As I mentioned in the last episode, Diageo plans to close its bottling plant in Kilmarnock, which has been the home of Johnnie Walker whiskey for nearly two centuries. Parliament will debate the closure plans in London this week. The Kilmarnock closing will cut 700 jobs in an area with already high unemployment rates. Diageo executives are refuting reports they plan to eventually move some bottling operations outside Scotland. Diageo Europe President Andrew Morgan told The Scotsman the company is committed to keeping Scotch whisky production completely within the borders of Scotland. At a time when many governments are raising alcohol taxes to bring in more money, Alberta is cutting its tax rate. The Canadian province is one of the few where liquor sales are completely privatized and has a reputation as a hot spot for whiskey collectors for that reason. Alberta Premier Ed Stelmach has reversed the province's alcohol tax hike 3 months after it took effect. That tax hike added about 30% to the wholesale cost of a bottle of whiskey. Now, Brooke Laddy was one of the first distilleries in Scotland to offer a whiskey academy for people who wanted to learn more about the art of distilling. The classes have been going on since 2003, but the distillery has announced that this October's class will be the final one. In a statement on the Brooke Laddy website, the distillery noted that production is now four times what it was when the academy started, and it's just become too hard to manage the academy with that production level. Malt Advocate's John Hansel reported this as well on his blog, What Does John Know, this past week. If you look at the links page on the WhiskeyCast website, you'll find a link to John's blog and many more whiskey blogs from around the world. And if you have a link to suggest, just email me. More awards to report this week, this time for books on whisky. Fellow malt maniac Ulf Buxrud won third place for Best Spirits Book in the World in the Gourmand World Cookbook Awards for his book Japanese Whisky, Facts, Figures, and Taste. And the winner of the Best Book on Cooking with Spirits, Beer, or Wine went to Sheila McConachy and Graham Harvey of the Crag and Mill Restaurant in Grantown-on-Spey, Scotland, for their book, The Whisky Kitchen, 100 Ways with Whisky and Food. You'll find both books in the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, along with the one I'm currently reading, Richard Patterson's memoir, Goodness Knows, co-written with Gavin Smith. A few new whiskeys to mention this week. Brown-Forman will be celebrating George Garvin Brown's birthday on time this year. The annual Old Forester birthday bourbon is being bottled now in Kentucky. You may recall last year's edition was a belated birthday bourbon because of glass problems and the bottling schedule for the special 75th anniversary of Prohibition's repeal version of Old Forester. On the Scotch front, Barry Brothers and Rudd is releasing some new bottlings, including a single-grain Scotch distilled in 2000 at the North British Distillery and a 1971 Invergordon single-grain. If you've never tried a single-grain Scotch or thought it was only good for blending, you really ought to try one sometime. They offer a completely different taste profile from single malts, usually with a light and sweeter taste. In fact, they're a really good choice for a summertime whiskey. Now, Barry Brothers and Rudd is also releasing a new edition of its peated Irish single malt, Cray Namona, along with the John Milroy selection of single malts, a 7-year-old Pulteney, a 10-year-old Laphroaig, a 21-year-old Beaumont, and a 26-year-old Kalila. Finally, there's a really rare 1982 malt from the silent Glenmore Distillery coming soon. For more details, you'll find a link to the Barry Brothers website at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Binny's in Chicago will hold an Ardbeg tasting at its South Loop store on July 23rd. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society will hold preview tastings of its August releases on the 24th in London, Stirling, and Newcastle, and a tasting on the 25th in London to mark the gathering of the clans that weekend in Edinburgh. Lochfine Whiskies in Edinburgh hosts the annual Whiskey Fringe Festival on August 15th and 16th, and Bonhams will hold 3 days of whiskey auctions as part of its annual Scottish sale on August 18th through the 21st. And as we discussed last week with Doug Van Tienen, Whiskey Live Sydney will run from August 31st through September 6th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
On past episodes, we've heard from collectors Giuseppe Bignoni and Marcel Van Hills. Bignoni's collection spans the world, while Marcel specializes in Laphroaigs. This time around, we'll spend a few minutes with Dutch collector Hans-Henrik Hansen, who has what may be the largest collection of Glenfiddichs on record. He's also preparing for a festival in his backyard, the Danish Malt Whiskey Academy's Wild Whiskey Weekend.
It's from the 16th of October until the 18th, and it's made by the Danish Malt Whiskey Academy. And we make it at our hotel, and normally we are about 100 people, and we have somebody coming over from the distilleries. And this year, Glenfarclas will come over, and maybe a few more. So it will be quite nice to have some distilleries coming over also.
And you have openings for other people who would want to join you if it's available, right?
Yeah, we have, and normally we have people coming from several countries in Europe. Even one year we had one from Japan, but we only have space for about 100 people. So it's who joins first will have a room. Otherwise, you have to book room somewhere else. But normally we have rooms for all.
How can people find out more about it?
We will launch something on the internet soon. I hope that Danish Malt Whiskey Academy will have it in English on the website, and I will let you know about it.
Okay.
We have done it.
Let's turn to your passion now.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Glenfiddich collection that you've put together.
Well, it's about 450 bottles now, so it's my basement is nearly full. And I started collecting in 2000 when we visited Glenfiddich first time. They just launched the private the vintage reserves with the wooden boxes at that time, and I was so lucky to get one of the first one, and that started the collection. Actually,
why Glenfiddich?
Well, it was the second distillery we met, and there was a nice guy giving us a tour, and I saw the wooden box, and that was the start, and they have been so nice to me after that, so I just love the way they are treating people there also. They are so nice to me and to the other collectors I know, so that's why, I think.
Now, you've sort of made it your goal to collect every release they put out, right?
Yeah, I try to, but it's hard to find, and they don't have any records from some of the first ones. So they have called me sometimes to ask about bottles. That's quite funny, but so it is. And I have the one they had without any age statement, I have in about 100 different versions, so they are hard to find sometimes.
What's the oldest bottle you have?
I have an independent bottling from probably 1800 in the 90s, but the oldest original bottling will be one from about between 1925 and 1937. I can't give you the exact year.
Now, I remember a couple of years ago being at an auction in New York for one of the World War II era bottles, or post-World War II era bottles. Were you involved in the bidding for that one?
No, I was involved in the bidding for the 1937.
That's the one.
Yeah, a friend of mine bought it for me. So it's standing here in Denmark. Jan Miller was so nice to bring it back after some months, so we didn't have to ship it. So that was nice.
Yeah, you and Ian Miller, tell me your best Ian Miller story, because I know you've run into him a few times over the years.
Yeah, and he has been visiting us here also for some years. He's a nice guy. He's always friendly, and he have a lot of nice stories to tell also. But he's just a nice guy who loves the whiskey, so he's nice to talk to. And he have been very helpful bringing bottles back from U.S. when I have found them there, and have been friendly when we have been at the distillery. So he was also the one who gave me a present together with Jens Tolstrup, who used to be a brand ambassador for Glenfiddich too. Back in 2000, we visited the distillery, and he offered me 20 casks laying on the floor. I could pick one of the casks, and I could make my own bottle one out of one, and I found a nice 1955, and that was pretty nice. So it's one out of one in the wooden box, like the vintage reserves and private vintages.
A 1955 is pretty nice?
It's one of the best, actually. It's one of the best I ever tasted. And Sats from Whiskey Farm rated it something like 93, I think. So I'm not the only one who likes it.
Now, I know you've also had some help from other people around the world in tracking down some of these bottles in the past.
Yeah, for sure.
Who else has helped you out, and what's the hardest you've had to work to get some of these rare bottlings? Because I know they occasionally do special one-off bottlings they've done them for one of the stores in Canada occasionally and some other places around the world. What's the hardest you've had to work to get a bottle?
Well, the one of the Indian ones was one of the most difficult to find, because that involved all the malt maniacs to get it, actually. I was interviewed by Sash for the French whiskey magazine, and he connected me to the Indian guy who is malt maniac too, and he was searching for 3 months, and then luckily he found it, because it was given away as present for a wedding 4 years earlier, and it had never been for sale. And one of his, I think it was his chef, who found it for him, and I managed to swap it for a couple of nice bottles. And he brought it over when he visited Europe next time, and brought it here in person. So that was nice, but it took some years to find it first time. And that's pretty rare. I think it's 220 bottles.
One thing I've discussed with other collectors in the past is the issue of fake bottles that sprout up on the market occasionally. Have you ever had a problem with a fake?
I'm not quite sure, but I might have one, but I'm not sure. There's at least one independent bottling that I wouldn't sell to anybody else, because I'm not sure if it's a fake or not, because I've been checking everything and all the dates on the labels, and you can't find something on the internet, so it might be a fake one.
What advice would you have for other collectors on avoiding fakes?
It's quite hard, but you have to talk together also if you collect it. I'm connected with some other guys collecting Glenfiddich, and we discuss the issue from time to time. If we find a bottle and nobody knows about it, we discuss it, if it's genuine or not. But I don't think Glenfiddich I don't think there are many fakes there. I think because there's not that many independent bottlings, and I think many of the fake ones have been independent bottlings also, but of course there have been, like the Magellans, there was a lot of problems with the old ones there. So I think we are lucky with the Glenfiddichs.
Does it help that Glenfiddich doesn't generally release casks for independent bottlings?
Yeah, of course it does. I think it's, they haven't done it since 74, so it makes a lot, and it's also easier to collect if there's not that many independent bottlings.
Does it also make it harder that Glenfiddich didn't keep a lot of records in the old days?
Yeah, I think some of the papers was flooded years back, so they are missing a lot of papers, but they might have them somewhere around, but they don't have them, so they can't read it, read them regularly. But it's also, they ask me sometimes.
You have information they don't have anymore, right?
Yes, and they was here last year. They was here for 3 days, just making photos of all the bottles. So they might pop on up on the Glenfiddich website one day, I think.
Now, some of the collectors I've talked with collect a type of a whiskey from one distillery, but they don't always drink it. Is that the case with you? Do you drink your collection, or do you drink something else?
I drink my collection and I drink something else too. I love whiskey, actually, but of course there's a bottle I haven't tasted, like some of the one from India, for example. I only have one bottle, but the 1937, the 50 years and so on, I have tasted most of them.
How was that 1937?
Well, you could really taste it was it had been 64 years in the cask. There was a lot of wood, but it was, I prefer the 40 years for the 1937. There's a little too much wood in my opinion in the 1937, but still it's amazing it have survived so many years in the cask and still over 40%. Actually, it was, I think, 44%. It is.
Of all the expressions you've collected over the years from Glenfiddich, which one was your favorite?
I think the one that I had as a present, the one from 1955, was the one I loved the most. But of the regular ones, I really like the 21 years old.
Now, which whiskey from Glenfiddich are you still looking for? What's number one on your wish list?
Well, it's actually hard to tell. I know there is the first, I don't know even if you can call it the private vintage, or we should call it a vintage reserve. They released six bottles of a 1959, I think it was, for a charity party, and I know there was Drunk Tree, and I know the distillery have a half bottle, and I think one was sold at McTeer's auction, one auction before I started looking there. So it gives me one bottle to find, and I don't know where to search for it.
Maybe somebody listening to this will know where it is or be able to point you in the right direction.
That would be nice. I think I can offer them some nice swaps.
Is that how you do most of your deals, is with swaps, or do you have to wind up paying some cash too?
Cash, of course, often, but swap is always good. I had some nice artifacts I used for swapping, and they are always good for swapping artifacts, single casks.
What else do you have in your collection besides the artifacts?
Well, I had a lot of rare malts, but I just sold them. I needed the space for the Glenfiddichs, and also they soon will release a new 50 years Glenfiddich, and I think the price will be quite high.
Now, what are your plans eventually for the collection? Are you intending to drink it all at some point, or what do you want to do with it at some point?
Actually, I haven't decided yet, but I go in pension and maybe I want to sell it, I probably will offer it to the distillery and let's see if they want it, because I know they are missing a lot of the bottles for sure. They didn't put one away of each bottling, so they are missing a lot of them and could be interested.
But that's a long time away, of course.
Yeah, of course it is. And nobody knows what happens in the meantime, so. But I think that would be the first offer, not to split the collection and sell it bottle by bottle.
Hans Henrik has posted some photos of his collection on the web, and you'll find a link to them at the WhiskeyCast website. And as more details become available on the Wild Whiskey Weekend, I'll keep you posted on that as well. Finally, the first WhiskeyCast competition is over. For the past week, I've been asking you to post your tasting notes on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page, with the winner receiving a Templeton Rye t-shirt. There was some confusion over whether the tasting notes had to be for Templeton Rye, which we featured a couple of weeks ago on WhiskeyCast. Because of its limited availability, I said the tasting notes could be for any whiskey, but the winner did post notes for Templeton Rye. Mike Lysak had this to say. Templeton Rye has an aroma that lets you know you're in for something good. The taste is sharp, then smooth. I get a hint of apricot, and then it smooths out. I can't use the word smooth enough. In a glass, neat, it rewards you with flavor. In a drink, Templeton Rye brings life to a Manhattan. Take time to ponder the label. It reflects the craftsmanship of the whiskey. The hand-numbered label makes it feel collectible. There is a reason they call it the good stuff. Congratulations, Mike. Your Templeton Rye shirt is in the mail. And because there was some confusion, I'll extend the contest for another week. Your tasting notes, again, can be for any whiskey from any distillery. This week's prize is pretty rare. I've mentioned the Knob Creek drought of 2009. It's temporarily unavailable because the folks at Jim Beam ran out of 9-year-old Knob Creek in the warehouses and won't have any until November. I have an I Survived the Drought of 2009 t-shirt for this week's winner. Again, post your tasting notes on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page to compete. You'll find a link to the Facebook page and my Twitter feed at the WhiskeyCast website, along with the calendar of events, my tasting notes, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.